Hello and welcome to another episode of No Plans to Merge. I'm your host, Daniel Colborn.
I'm your host, Caleb Porzio.
And today's episode is brought to you by...
Soulja Boy.
Up in that hoe.
Wami.
Crank it.
Crank that. Wami Row.
Row.
Caleb, you're aware of Soulja Boy's recent antics?
No.
Let me tell you, Soulja Boy is a Twitch streamer now.
Oh.
And he plays old school RuneScape 10 hours a day.
Are you kidding me?
I am not kidding
you.
No
way.
Yeah. So I have been watching a lot of Soulja Boy experiencing RuneScape for the first time on Twitch recently.
He's just like grinding publicly?
Dude, he's doing it, dude. He ran... There was this great moment. I tweeted it for the listener and the user to go find. I feel like this tweet didn't get the correct amount of love, so please go find it. Soulja Boy was running into the wilderness. So everywhere he goes, there's like 100 people following him.
Okay.
So I was standing at the Grand Exchange the other day, and I saw about 100 like people just dripped out in like the most expensive stuff.
Yeah.
You know, walking past me, and I was like, "What is this?" And then I realized everyone kept saying "Soulja Boy" in chat, and I was like, "No way!" So I went on. I was like, "Soulja Boy must be streaming." And wow. So I went. And I was like, "Soulja Boy Twitch." And I found it, and there he is, like, running past me at the Grand Exchange. And I was like,
crazy.
There goes my hero. Watch him.
That's insane.
So anyway.
That sounds like the worst game to watch streaming of.
Not when Soulja Boy's doing it.
Right, yeah.
So him and his crew, he basically was like, I'm going to go into the wilderness. Like, I'm ready to, like, cross that barrier into the wilderness and see what's going on. For the uninitiated non-RuneScape players out there, the wilderness is a place where like other players can attack you. So he like takes off all his armor, puts it in the bank, and just like runs into the wilderness. And like he's running past, he's like level 40 or whatever, right? He's running past these like level 100 enemies and stuff, and it's like freaking out. And he's like running away from them, and he dips into a cave. And it's Corp. Do you know Corp?
No.
It's like Corp Bialis or something. It's like, it's this dragon for a quest. It's a dragon boss. That's 785 combat level. One of the strongest things in the game. And he just runs in, sees it, and is like, ah! Just like freaking out. It's great. I love Soulja Boy playing RuneScape in 2020.
Wow.
It's a very good moment. Because it's like two things from the same era of time, Soulja Boy and RuneScape.
Right.
You know? Just happening on Twitch in 2020. It's very strange.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, dude.
How's your bots coming?
Update
for the user. Daniel has a new career as a RuneScape bot maker.
Which is how
RuneScape
I started.
Money farmer.
Which is what I did.
Which is what both
child,
of us
as a boy.
This is
yeah. We both botted RuneScape.
Yeah, that's how we both learned programming.
So I had a bot that basically like successfully like bought things from the Grand Exchange and then enchanted them and then high-alked them, which is like a slow and steady money-making method. But it worked really well. And then I tried to run it again and it didn't work. And I think it is like something with the image detection. That like based on like a slight difference in my camera angle, like the anti-aliasing is slightly different. Like in both instances, the camera was pointing due north.
Yeah.
But it could have been off by a percentage or two, and that just makes the lines anti-alias differently.
Ugh.
So I need to be a little smarter with my image detection.
Okay.
But it worked for a second really well.
That's great.
And it was a bot totally written in Python. It was cool. It was very cool.
That is cool.
And I made like libraries. Like I wrote the API I wanted first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did I did it well. So I have like a Grand Exchange library that has methods. And I have like a bank library that has methods, you know?
Yep.
And so in theory, over time, I could build out these libraries with all of the right images for thing to recognize, you know?
Yep.
And theoretically, like make a giant set of utilities that I could reuse in scripts and stuff like that, but I didn't. It broke the second time I ran it, and then I got discouraged, and I was like, I'm just going to play RuneScape for a little bit.
Nice.
Yeah, Dwug.
Yeah. Oh, I discovered a, or just employed a new strategy in Warzone.
Oh, yeah?
You go to war. So Call of Duty Warzone, for the friends and listeners of the show, it's a big open map thing. About 150 people drop in and you all kill each other until the last man standing wins. And there's this circle that gets smaller and smaller. You don't know where it is, but it's always within itself. And it gets smaller and smaller as the game goes on until you're forced together with people. And that's how it works. Whatever. You know, I'm not going to bore everybody with this Call of Duty nonsense, but basically you get the flag recons. I just go for like three of them right away and it shows you the future. Yeah, and you get
final circle.
Yeah, so basically you know where the circle's going to be at the end. And then you go like, you get a bunch of money from that. And then you like buy a munitions box and armor. And then you just go and you just camp. And get second place twice in a row.
Nice.
Yep.
Hell yeah.
D-Cole, so we got a couple things to cover today.
Yes.
Let's make a list. I got bikes and space.
Bikes and space.
And there was a third one. Bikes and
I want to talk about... team comp.
You got team comp. Maybe I want to talk about a live wire optimization thing. Okay. So we got a smorgasbord.
Yeah, it sounds like a long episode for a hard out at 5.
No. We got time.
All right.
Where do we want to start?
Talk to me about bikes.
I just put tires on Hanny's bike. You can't buy bikes right now. There's a bike shortage.
Bike shortage.
At least in my area and the internet. Mm. It's crazy. I tried to buy a bike. You can't.
You think I can make a bunch of money selling my bike right now?
I don't know. I mean...
I haven't ridden it in a while.
I don't know. I don't think so, because the Craigslist market still seemed plentiful, but the bikes weren't very good. At least in Buffalo, you know?
Yeah.
But Burt's Bikes, is that a national thing? You know what Burt's Bikes is? You probably don't.
I don't know Burt's. I know his bees, but yeah, I've never seen his bikes.
Or his bots. His beans. So Burt's Bikes is like a Walmart of bikes. Like it's like a bike superstore or whatever. Totally, almost completely out of bikes. It's crazy. It must just be the COVID thing. Is like maybe the supply chain's low on bikes. I don't know, but it's likely both that everybody wants bikes to ride away.
And there's not a lot of China boats coming in.
Yeah. So there's no bikes. So I had to get clever and fix her existing bike. So I did that. Yep. And,
the extant bike
right before we got on this call. And it's just so much fun to tune up a bike, you know, like when you're a kid
road
and
bike
you just like,
or what kind of bike?
I'm sort of converting this mountain bike into like a hybrid.
Gotcha. So what kind of tires?
It had like those knobby, you know, tires, and I put on like much smaller hybrid type tires.
Cool.
I replaced a chain and I'm working on like, you know, tuning up all the gear shifter things so they don't suck as bad, but anyway, and I might swap the fork out with something without shocks.
Yeah,
so you know, we're doing that's fun. So I'm riding 100 miles on Sunday. That's the thing, that's the bike thing. So I've been you know, riding a bunch, training, and I've always had this thought that, you know, what's his name, you know, the guy that Mr. Rogers.
Emeril Lagasse.
Close. Mr. Rogers. It has been said that he would swim every morning, you know, like he got up super early every day.
He's also a sniper in Vietnam.
Yeah. And he has tattoos in his arm. Yes, he would get up super early this morning. That's a perfect example of lunch table lies. I whenever I come across a new one and then I realize that we've talked about this, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Like,
well, it's like the Pop Rocks and soda thing.
Yeah, in your stomach. Your stomach explodes.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Dude, there's so many. That's a good one. There's, trying to think. Oh, the one that I was in, the company I was in, I couldn't say it, but I'll say it here. We'll get dirty. Marilyn Manson took out his bottom rib so that he could, suck his own dick. Yeah. That was one that, you know, I mean, these are facts, man.
Yeah.
To the middle school lunch table, these are facts.
Yeah.
There's so many of these facts. And I said one recently to someone and I wish I remember what it was. And I was like saying it. I'm like, wait a minute. This is one I think I have to undo. This doesn't sound very true. Uh-huh. And then I was explaining this category of facts, and I was like, I can't even think of any, but there's a ton. The only one I could think of was the Marilyn Manson one, and I couldn't say it.
Right.
So anyway, that's a good example. Mr. Rogers was a sniper and he has tattoos. Yeah. That's why he wears the sweater, is because he has tattoos. That was the line.
Cover of sniper tattoos.
Oh, so funny.
Just like Allen Iverson.
So he works out every morning, and so you would think like, and I
think that's actually a lunch table lie. He actually lives a very sedentary life.
Yeah, it slipped into the documentary.
Yeah,
he wakes up super early and he swims a zillion laps, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I've been waking up early,
very low
and
impact
biking,
exercise.
And it's not what it's cracked up to be. I'm like exhausted all the time. When I get back, I'm exhausted. I can't work.
Running a lot of hills. What are you doing?
Yeah, I train on hills. The hills are by my house, but I also, the ride is not hilly. So I've done some longer rides, not
on
hills.
So why are you so exhausted then?
Dude, it's just exhausting.
You're like really pushing it?
No. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you know what?
Maybe you should back off a little bit and chill and enjoy the day.
Why do you say this? Because you're like, oh, if you're biking on flat ground, like what? You're not going to get like burnt out biking on flat ground, right?
I mean, not unless you're really pushing it or you're biking like an extreme distance.
Okay. Well, I'm doing both. But I used to think that. I remember hearing people would like bike these long distances and I'd be like, but just biking? Like,
does your bike suck? I don't understand.
No, it's not bad. It's just like, I mean, these are long distances.
What kind of bike is it? Is it a road bike?
It's a hybrid bike.
Skinny tires or no?
I mean, it's not a road bike, no.
Okay, well, that's why you're tired.
No, even if I had a road bike, I would be tired. Because
you don't understand the impact of skinny little tires.
No, I do. I know it makes you more efficient.
It's a huge difference.
I know it's a big difference, but in my mind, you would just go faster. Because you're already going as fast as you can, you know?
Okay, first of all, don't go as fast as you can.
Well, you're going as fast as you can sustain. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not just sitting there, like, trolling around at a I-could-do-this-all-day pace. You're, like, you're trying to make a decent pace, like 15 miles an hour or more.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
If I was on a road bike,
I'd
go faster.
But what I'm saying is the amount of effort required to sustain that pace on a road bike.
Yeah, I know.
If that's a good pace, then why wouldn't you just ride a bike that requires less effort to sustain that pace?
You know, I'll say one, I don't have... That's a good question. This is a great question. One, I don't have a road bike.
Okay, yes, sure. We'll talk about that problem in a second.
That's probably the biggest problem.
Uh-huh.
Two, the bike I have is not a bad bike. It's pretty good. I mean, it's decent.
I think
it's not great.
Honestly, Caleb... I think if you're finding that like you're wearing yourself out really hard riding a bike on flat ground, it might be a bad bike.
No, Tico. If you're riding against wind, there's hills. You know, we're not talking like big hills. Sometimes I go on rides. Yesterday I did a very, very big hill and I was toast when I got home. But I did 11 miles with a big hill and I was toast. Normally, if I did 11 miles, I'd be totally fine, 100% fine. I would feel the same amount of toast when I do like 30 miles, or 40 or more. I don't know. If you ever ridden for a really long distance?
Yeah. Me and my dad, when I was a kid, we would load up camping stuff on bikes.
Nice.
And we rode around. So Chiba is a peninsula. Chiba is like a prefecture or like a state basically in Japan.
Yeah.
Right next to Tokyo. And it's like a peninsula that hangs down into the water and then comes back.
Yeah.
And we lived right at the top of the peninsula.
Yep.
Right at the base of the peninsula, I guess you would say. So we would do a trip. We did it twice where we basically like set out on bikes and rode around the peninsula of Chiba and then back to our house.
And camped along the way.
It took like 3 or 4 days. Sweet. And we would camp every night.
Wow.
One time it started raining. We camped kind of down off the side of a highway. And it started raining and the water all poured down the embankments of the highway and just like totally flooded us out. And it was like 3 in the morning or something. All of our stuff got super wet. So we like woke up the next day with all this wet stuff and just like rode to a laundromat and like dried out all of our sleeping bags and stuff and then loaded it back up and kept riding.
That's crazy.
It was rough sometimes.
Yeah, it doesn't sound great.
So yes, I have. But like my recent biking experience was before I moved to this house when I still lived like downtown in Asheville.
Yeah.
I bought a bike.
Yeah, you were biking a bunch. I would like call you and you'd be on a hill or something.
Yeah. I was biking a lot. And it was very hilly, very mountainous.
Yeah.
You know? And like that would gas me out. Like going up those giant hills and stuff would gas me out. But like in the rare opportunities where I had a chance to ride on flat ground.
Yeah.
It's like the least tiring thing in the entire world. It's just like, yeah, whatever.
Then you weren't riding fast enough or there was no wind or whatever. Or you weren't doing it for long enough. I think
that's the thing, man, is like...
I think you would get tired after a long time.
Yeah, sure. I agree that like if I rode 100 miles, it would not feel
I think if you rode 50 miles, you would be very tired.
Maybe. Yeah, probably. I'm just saying, like, what's the rush, bud?
I generally agree. And on Sunday, I'm not trying to make any time or anything. But when I'm training, I'm trying to get in as much juice as I can.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, you're training. You're trying to build up. Well, and that's the thing, right? It's like, what are you complaining about being tired for if your whole thing is like, I'm going to push it to the wall so that I get the most juice possible?
Yeah, no, I wasn't necessarily complaining. I guess I was complaining. I'm not. My whole purpose here was not to bitch about being tired, D-Cole.
Mm.
You just latched onto that.
I
just wanted to express to you that most of these days I've been really tired while working.
Yeah.
Because I guess what I wanted to say was my dream of like waking up super early and like being Mr. Rogers and then like go and start your day. What it really looks like is like, ah, I need a nap.
Yeah.
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 You've done a lot
criticizing skepticizing you on this podcast recently.
Right now. This is happening right now. You need to back off, my friend. That's what you need to do.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it feels good to you know, bike, whatever. Okay, biking. Space. We'll blow through this one. Space. Mm-hmm. Super into space lately.
You are.
Yeah. Are you into space?
As much as any red-blooded American boy.
Like physics? Like astrophysics and stuff?
I mean, I don't know what you're specifically talking about, but sure. Go on.
Space time. Black holes.
Yeah.
Supernova stars, neutron stars, dwarfs.
Love all that stuff. Uh-huh.
Okay, you're into that?
Yeah.
Word. It's crazy.
I'm about it.
It's just crazy.
It's wild.
It's just
wild
crazy. Stuff. The whole thing's crazy to me.
Oh, yeah.
It's just crazy to me. Oh, everything. I just like watch these videos and just get my mind melted like all the time. What are you laughing at?
You know what's crazy to me? Everything, dude. It's just wild.
It's crazy. I have such a hard time communicating the feelings I feel when I dwell on these gigantic things like space and you know, and like contemplating the end of
yourself.
What do you mean?
Because of biking? Yeah, it's the biking, that's what it is.
The end of the universe. That's like a good, I like kind of learning about space from questions I have, you know, like
sure,
how does the universe end? And you go down that road and you're like, whoa.
And like the philosophical implications of space.
Sure. Like what?
I don't know, just whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Agreed.
Like infinity, the concept of infinity.
Yeah, yeah.
And like all of that.
Yeah, I mean, yes, like what's at, like our universe is expanding, but like what's beyond our universe, you know?
Right, and is there anything, or does the universe actually go on forever, and does that mean that there is a multiverse because of that?
Right, and can we create a sub-universe, like our universe will die?
Right, and does that mean something about like freedom, free will, you know, and...
Yeah, that is interesting, like the concept of just like...
There's a lot of crossover, like, I feel like, between like space nerdery and philosophy nerdery.
Yeah, I think so. I think like the free will thing you're saying, like I in my every action is like a physical, like a born of a physical process. So like,
yeah, it's like ad infinitum.
So yeah, exactly. Like life is deterministic. Everything I'm saying right now happened because of conditions set up.
Right.
At the Big
and
Bang.
That there are theoretically infinite universes where every different divergence
is
occurring.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know? And that, but that all of them were determined, you know?
Yeah, It's crazy. And but speed like of light
differences in the Big Bang or whatever.
Yes. That is something. And I mean, really just like, oh man, the idea of how small we are and how small of a time period we're born in, you know, like, I guess the scale of space, just contemplating like your scale, the way that you think compared to the scale of space.
Sure.
Does something, you know?
Does something, yeah.
Does something crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so oh, that's yeah, that.
You ever notice Canadians call people bud probably a little bit more than anybody else? Hey, bud.
I don't know. Tell me about Teams, Deco. Microsoft Teams you've been using?
No. Don't taunt me. Don't mock me just because I have a job.
Hey.
Just don't suggest I would use Microsoft Teams. Although we were using Jira for a second, but we're out of it. We're out of the woods.
Good, good.
Any
company who uses Jira is...
Yeah, just attack them, dude.
Yep.
Rip them a new one, dude. Go for it.
Any company that uses Jira is my enemy.
Mm. And the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah. Keep your enemies close.
Yeah, keep Jira closer.
Keep Jira closer. Okay,
well, that's
on.
Why we used it. I was just trying to keep an eye on it. No. So we have this thing at work, which is a thing that every company has, right? Which is that we have a couple like long-term projects that we want to do, right?
Right.
Like there's big chunks of the app that are still like just chugging along in the non-Laravel code.
Yeah.
That we need to get migrated over into Laravel.
Classic. Classic. Right? I bet
and
minimum 50% of people listening to the show work for a company
like
or have have and like half the meetings are about the legacy system.
Or there's like other things like we want to move to Stripe from authorize.net.
Yeah.
Right? There's like these things
where
it's like,
dude, I bet half the companies are dealing with the same thing. These are such common scenarios.
And it's like these are big projects, multi-sprint, probably multi-month projects.
Yeah.
You know? And we could do them, except that we have to do all this other stuff too.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, we need to change the way that this interacts with that. We need to change the email notification that goes out because now it's different for people in Texas. You know? Just all of the normal problems of owning an app, right? Is that things change and there's new little tweaks that need to happen or bug fixes or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And so I was thinking about, you know, you're always thinking about like, how do we handle these two things? So I would say there's like three categories of tasks, right? There's tasks that advance the large goals.
Yeah.
Right? There are tasks that are like, I guess what you would call like support tasks, right? So tasks that someone who is not a programmer is asking for that it would be nice to give them what they want in a time frame that's reasonable.
Yeah.
As opposed to being like, yeah, we'll do that after we move the entire application to Stripe.
Yeah.
You know? And then there's like bugs, like something broke or, you know, whatever. So how do we handle these like two things that come in kind of real time with this other thing that's like going to happen for a long time?
Yeah.
And here is what I've been thinking about. Have you ever played any game that had tanks and healers and DPS?
No.
Are you familiar with those terms?
No.
Okay. So in like,
it's like real-time strategy type thing. Okay.
Well, like in like Dungeons and Dragons, but also in games like World of Warcraft or whatever.
Okay.
You will often be like in a situation where you're fighting a big boss.
Yeah.
And you need to have a normal team composition would be a tank whose goal is to keep the boss mad at them and keep taking a bunch of damage.
Yep.
And that way the boss isn't attacking all the other members of the team.
Yeah.
Right? Then you have healers, mm-hmm. whose job is to keep everyone, but specifically the tank, mm-hmm. alive.
Okay.
Right? So the tank is taking a ton of damage. The healers are keeping the tank up. And then everyone else is DPS, whose job is to do damage per second. Mm. The maximum amount of damage in the shortest amount of time so that we kill the boss before the boss kills the tank. Because if the tank dies, we all die.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking in those terms, and I was like, that would make a really good team composition, right? So basically, you have a tank whose role is to basically tank all of the support requests and bugs, right?
Yep.
Which allows the DPS, the other people, to focus on doing as much damage per second, you know, as much work as quickly as possible on the large goals that we have.
Yeah.
Right. And then you'd have a support player whose job is basically to bail the tank out if they get overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Or bail the DPS out if they're overwhelmed or if they need some help with something or if they get blocked or whatever. Right.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, and it'd be so cool because, like, if you work in some kind of a sprint or week to week, or if you work in any kind of time gated way,
right,
that gives you a natural rotation.
You can rotate, yeah.
Where you could say, like, all right, I'm tanking this week. You guys are on DPS, your support this week. And we happen to have four people on our team. So I'm trying to pitch this idea. I pitched the rotation idea. And then one guy was like, well, actually, like, I kind of would prefer to tank. Like, I like dealing with all the incoming support requests and stuff. And I was like, who's guy? You're a very rare person.
You should clone yourself.
Yeah.
I do know those people, and those people are the people I always think of, like, they're the most valuable employees.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The people who are just, like, throw me into the fire.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
What is wrong with them? Good for you.
But, yeah, anyway, what do you think about that metaphor for team comps, and what do you think about that actual strategy of team comps?
I love it.
Cool.
I think it's brilliant.
I like it, too.
Here's how my thought process usually goes. Uh-huh. So LiveWire is my company at the moment. And
Do you have an LLC yet?
No, I don't do any of that stuff. Uh-huh. I probably should at some point. But I try to keep it lightweight. Gotta keep it lightweight. This is the thing, quick tangent, that, you know, in my life, the people who know that I'm a tad of an entrepreneur and have been, when somebody has, like, an entrepreneurial idea or they want to start something or whatever, and they get really excited, and, you know, they come to me and they're...
Yeah, you're the guy to go to.
Yeah, so they want to, like, talk to me about their idea and what's involved and, you know, like, do I get an LLC? I'm looking into different ways of organizing and, like, you know, I got a business plan and, you know, and I mean, you would say the same thing. I'm like, I don't have any of that. Like, I thought I needed all that when I was in high school and I was fixing people's computers and I wanted to make CP productions, whatever. Like, I needed business cards, I needed a logo, I needed a business plan, and I needed to be an LLC. And
yeah, well, you need those things if you want to go convince an investor to give you money and you have nothing to show except for your business cards and your business plan.
Right. There is a different route where that is a helpful thing. But even getting started, you know, I don't know. The thing just stop. Don't do a thing. Just make money. Settle up later. Like, I don't have a company. I don't have anything. I'm just Caleb Porzio on my taxes.
Yeah.
Schedule C. Yeah, C-Pors. So, anyway. T-Cool, I love the idea. And so my company, LiveWire, has bugs that come in all the time.
They sure
GitHub
do.
Issues and Alpine. Mm-hmm. And then there's little, like, improvement things. And then there's big things. So I sort of deal with this myself. I'm generally kind of wearing all three hats. There's people in the community who help with the first and the second, but not really help with the big one, which is great. That's my favorite thing. So anyway, I get it. And usually when I think about this prospect of, and this is a dynamic that I've experienced at every single place that I've worked in any, you know, real, not like Titan working on, you know, even Titan itself has legacy projects, whatever. But, you know, at an agency, you're on a project.
Yeah.
A little bit different.
You would sometimes get assigned to queue work.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's, it's just a little bit different, but every like product situation that I've been in is this way. And it is this constant balance. And I think it's fantastic. So what I'm saying is my inclination is like, everybody should pitch in every, because I just feel guilty. Like, wow, I can't like live with myself making somebody else do all the bugs all the time. Mm-hmm. But I think, and so that the rotation is a cure for that, which I think is great as a cure for that. I think it's even better if somebody wants to just be the bug guy. I think that's fantastic. And
as long as they have the option to tap out of that at some point, if they grow to hate the bugs,
yeah,
they should have the option to tap out for a little bit and join the rotation.
Yeah. You know what? The rotation is great because I don't mind bug killing when it's the only thing I have to focus on.
Yeah.
But when you have to focus on all of the things all of the time, it's not productive and it wears you down.
Like, if you're going into a week or a sprint or something, right? And you're like, okay, I have one project that's going to take up half of this time. And then I have a bunch of little things that are 20 to 40 minute long fixes.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I call them like one to four hour fixes, you know?
Okay.
But I've got a bunch of these things that are like, oh, that's going to be half a day. Oh, that's going to be, I get three of these done in a day, you know?
Yeah.
It's so hard to decide, do I open the big can of worms first? Because I'm more interested in that and it's more exciting and it's cooler and that's the thing I want to work on first.
Yeah.
Or do I eat my vegetables first and close all these bugs and then work on the big fun thing? Because then if the scope on that expands or I want to spend more time doing something different or, you know, then I can because I already ate my vegetables.
You got to eat your vegetables first.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
It's interesting.
I mean, if that's the way the structure is, I just like eating all my vegetables at once. That's what matters.
Me too. And that's kind of why I would like to be on like a support role, you know, where it's like, okay, for 2 weeks, I can just eat vegetables for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
No problem, you know?
Yep.
Because then that means for 4 weeks, I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know.
Yep. I think it's insightful. I think focusing is huge. I think people.
Because like.
Yeah.
And the support character, right? That's the one we're not really talking about, right? So we're talking about the tank who's dealing with all the bug fixes and all the mess stuff you don't want to deal with, right?
Yep.
And then you've got the DPS. I think the support character fills two really good roles. So one is pairing and helping you figure things out, right?
Yep.
Getting you unstuck, being a creative brain who can help you with things. And then the other is all of the DevOps-y weird stuff that needs to happen sometimes. Like, oh, we need to upgrade to PHP 7.4. Can you upgrade to PHP 7.4, see if that breaks any tests, see if we have any money format scattered throughout of our thing that needs to be replaced with the number formatter, you know?
Yep.
Just like do the PHP 7.4 upgrade. Or like, hey, can you upgrade us to PHP unit 8 because we need to, you know? Or can you write a migration to change all of these column types to this column type, you know? Like those types of things, which are like, not really advancing the features, not really closing bugs, but are like making the world clean for the work. You know?
Yeah. I got a yawn here. Dickle.
Do it, dude. Dude, do it to it.
Sucking in that oxygen.
Yeah.
Okay, Dick. Yeah, suck it in, man. So I agree. Here are the roles that need to be done. You hit on a few there. There's bugs. That's one. There's bugs.
There's primary feature work.
Yeah. So let's think about this. That's kind of a vague one. Let's start the most concrete and work our way out. So bugs is the most concrete. Then I love the idea of a support role. I mean, okay, bugs. And here's maybe something important here is I think a lot of times the company thing is like, well, we're going to work on this big thing now, and then we're going to allot a week or two or three to caring for the old system or bringing this, you know, whatever. There should always be work being done on caring for an old system. That's not a bug. That's not bug work. This is system improvement work.
Sure.
This may be the DevOps-y type stuff that you're talking about.
But also like refactoring.
A lot of refactoring, adding tests to pass code, moving things, you know, code bases are always disjointed. This person's role for the sprint or month or whatever is solely, like basically system care, like the caretaker. So you got the bug killer, the caretaker, and what about like, I mean, there's just feature work that's like...
Yeah, which I think those people... Often that's the most fun.
Right.
Right? Because it's like, it's more greenfield. Yeah, it's like, you're creating routes, you're creating controllers, you're building things that didn't exist before.
Yeah.
Right? And you feel like the road's open in front of you.
Yeah.
You don't run into all these weird things, you know? Because it's just like, I'm building things, you know?
Yep.
But I feel like those people... Momentum is really important to that type of work. That sort of new building new things work, like momentum matters a lot. And if you get pulled off to upgrade your MySQL
version,
or you get pulled off to deal with this bug that's coming in production right now, like you can kind of lose the zest for the new feature and you can lose the energy, you know? So I feel like there is a, like, to me, like, the ultimate goal of this team structure is to make sure that those people never get pulled off of the big projects. So we never get slowed down by the bugs or the implementation details or the DevOps-y things. We never, those things never slow us down from making continual regular progress on pushing the app forward, right? Because there's more places that we want to take the app than there are hours in the day, you know?
Yep.
So, like, there's always a forward that we could be pushing the app. And I don't want... It's so easy to have a production bug and say the production bug happens while we're on stand-up, you know?
Yeah.
It's so easy for us just to all hang out on stand-up and then hang out there for 2 hours solving, like,
for sure.
Four people pairing on one production bug.
Yep.
And then we lost a day.
Right.
You know? That type of stuff is so easy. And I think having these roles where it's like, if a production bug comes in, we know whose job it is to deal with it, you know?
Yep.
We know whose job it is to debug it and fix it and, you know, all that. So anyway, I don't know. I think it'd just be a real cool thing, and I'm trying to pitch it inside.
Yeah, I think even the way I'm trying to think of my, like, dream setup that, like, bug smashing, if you're the bug smasher, I think these things should be 2 weeks long.
That's what they would be. Yeah.
Yeah. And the bug smasher is their job is just to like, it's just head down, smash bugs as fast as you can. Like not
you're
like,
tanking.
You're tanking.
Like that's what it is. Right. So it's you're tanking all the bullshit. You protect the feature workers from bullshit, you know, and you take a lot of damage, you know, and you deal with a lot of shit and it's crazy.
Yes, that's this is
but it's only for 2 weeks, right?
Right?
And all we need to do is kill the boss before the boss kills you.
And everybody does it.
Yeah.
It's on a rotation. So it's like, this is the worst work.
And you have healers, right? And you have someone who's backing you up where if you are taking too much damage, they can come in and say, okay, I'm going to help you with this. I'm going to pair with you on this. I'm going to take these three bugs
off
your plate.
Maybe.
You know?
I could see that as a positive. In my mind, I wouldn't even require that. Like I wouldn't need that, but it does make sense.
Yeah.
So you have the bug smasher and then this other role. I think the refactoring system care role should be the best role. I think it always exists. Everybody always has that in the rotation and you get to pick what you want to work on.
Mm.
It's totally up to you. This is your thing.
And that could be, I do think there's...
You still have to abide by like planning stuff. Like you have to like tell, you can't just go off and do nothing.
Yeah.
You have to like communicate what you're doing and whatever, but it's up to you. If you want to work on, you know, if you want to work on backfilling tests on whatever system, or if you want to upgrade PHP, or if you want to you know, set up whatever.
Redesign the admin UI or...
Yeah, it just has to be improving old stuff. It can't be building new fantasy stuff.
Yeah. That's cool.
And that's just like the fun one. It's like, have at it. Decide what you want
to
do.
And that could be the role that is the... that is also like the pairing person. Right?
Yeah.
Like, because I think it is important to have someone who is basically like, this person is available to pair if you need a second set of eyes.
Yeah.
But that's not like a full-time job.
Right. Yep.
You know, like being available is not a job.
Yeah.
But if it was the refactoring person.
Okay, go on.
Who's like, by day, you know, all day, every day, if you're not asking me to pair on something, I'm just making the world a better place over here, you know? And then like, if you get stuck, you need some eyes, like let me know and I'll compare with you for a couple hours and then I'll go back to making the world good.
I think the bug killer and the refactorer should be teamed up.
That's what I'm saying. That's why it's like tank and healer.
Right. And, but even, you know? Even more so than just like, it's a good kind of natural fit. The bug killer is really in the weeds of like systematic old problems.
Yeah.
And the refactorer can be informed by those things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know what we create? We're just getting crazy here. But the bug killer gets to decide what the refactorer does for the 2 weeks.
That's funny.
Yeah. Interesting.
The problem... No, it would have to be the bug killer from last sprint.
Right. Because they'd be...
The person who has just most recently been in the weeds.
Yes. The bug killer from last sprint assigns...
Becomes the healer from this sprint.
Oh, dude.
So you go from killing bugs into refactoring the sprint immediately after that.
Yes.
So you go from the weeds to like the Nirvana peaceful refactor zone with all of the pain. You let all of the pain of bug week. You let that in your soul crystallize into a diamond that you then build a lightsaber out of when you become a Jedi the next week.
It's great. It's fantastic.
I like it.
I like it. I like it a lot.
I like it.
I like it a lot.
I like
so,
it a bit.
Okay, so you got those two. And then, I mean, it could just be the rest is just like feature work project stuff. I mean, yeah. I think there's, I kind of want there to be, in a big enough company, there could be a place for this, but I kind of want there to be a position of somebody just pushing the envelope. Like somebody just experimenting, you know, making proof of concept.
The thing about our company is that Chris is going to do that, whether that's what he's supposed to be doing that week or not. Right? Like there's plenty of things that Chris has just like invented as a solution to a problem.
Yeah.
When he theoretically had other things to do, but because he's the CEO, he could just not do them and instead push the envelope, you know?
Yeah, right.
And no one's going to be able to successfully steal that job from Chris because he likes it too much.
Right.
So I feel like you just got to let him do it.
Funny.
You know?
But that, you know, that's like a valid thing. I mean, there's so many things that, I mean, this would be the explorer, would be the person who's like charting out a potential future architecture, who's, who maybe spends 2 weeks on a proof of concept for a different architecture or for a different system. Or, you know, whatever, or a different framework or whatever, just to experiment. That'd be a cool role. And then there's the feature people.
Yeah.
Then there's just feature folks, you know,
and,
just doing
feature
stuff.
But that job is, the feature folk job is so much more enjoyable when you're being protected from nonsense.
Yeah. When you can completely just absorb yourself in the thing that you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And crank.
Yep.
Crank that soldier boy.
Exactly. That's exactly it. You know, I dig this a lot, D-Cole. I think this is really good. I think the rotation is key. Basically, focus and rotation and acknowledging that there are different developer roles. And and that when you you're imposing a frictional like context switching cost when you just have everybody doing everything. You're losing when you're doing that.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Now, the question is, okay, so our team is 4 people, right? So it would be 1-1-2, right?
Mm-hmm.
So 1 tank, 1 healer, 2 feature.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And the question is, do you put the feature people on different long-running projects or the same long-running project?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
So if you put them on the same, then they can pair every day.
Right.
They can party.
I don't... I've never really experienced working on the same thing with somebody as like a good thing, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
You don't like pairing?
I do. I do like pairing.
You secretly don't like it though, right? You're one of those?
Kind of do, kind of don't. I'm unsure about it. But huh. I think what I mean is like the pairing makes sense, but
yeah.
But the not pairing work, you know, I don't know.
What if there was not that much not pairing work?
That's too much pairing. That's too exhausting.
Right, but what if there's only two people in this team who live in the same time zone as each other?
Okay.
Right? One guy's in France. I guess we all live in the same time zone, but I work in a different time zone than everyone else, you know?
Right.
So one guy's in France, I'm working as though I'm on the West Coast, basically.
Yep.
You know, and then we got two East Coast guys. So it would be the case that there's only like probably four or five hours of overlap for most of the time.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe you pair 4 hours in a day.
I mean, the feature work can be good. I guess I've just never, it's weird to me when two people are working on the same thing, you know?
Well, but then they split it how they see fit.
Right. And that can work. Yeah.
That can work. Yeah.
If the features are like relatively co-located.
Me and Sam Geitz were so good at that. There was a point in time where me and Sam Geitz were crushing. Did you ever work for the Big G?
Oh, I don't think so. No.
Okay. When me and Sam were working for the Big G, we would just annihilate things, right? And it was like totally unrestricted feature work.
Cool.
With no bug fixing, no anything.
Oh, wow.
And it was like Laravel React stuff, nice, right? And so there was tons of opportunities to split things in logical places and like pair for 3 hours and then split off. I'll work on this. You work on this. Let's talk tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then if either one of us didn't finish the thing that we were working on, then that was where we started pairing the next day.
Yep.
Like, oh yeah, I got stuck on this and then got frustrated and got off.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, cool. Well, like that's a great place to start pairing today. You know?
Yep.
So I don't know.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. Yep. It's cool.
All right. So did we get through your queue? We got through bikes. We got through space. We talked about team comp.
Talked about team stuff.
Do you have anything on, you have a notepad, you have a note card?
What was I going to say? I mean, there's like, I don't know.
You draw more stickers. You like the sticker? What do you think about the sticker?
Oh, that's awesome.
Ooh, very
sweet
cool.
Sweet beans, Deke. Yeah, we can just call it. I'm really excited about the LiveWire stuff I'm doing, but, did we talk about Dusk?
No.
We can talk about that quick.
Dusk? What about it? What is this, 2018?
Dusk is back, man.
Dusk is back?
I'm bringing Dusk back.
You're bringing it back.
It's the way to go for so many things.
This is going to last 6 months tops.
No. Maybe. I'm converting all of LiveWire tests to Dusk.
Oh, no.
Which is a huge thing. Huge.
That does sound like a huge mistake, yeah.
No, a huge thing. no, man. I mean, you know the trade-offs. I don't have to explain that to you.
Yeah.
But I am just, it's full stack testing is not, because LiveWire takes the brunt of JavaScript work, ideally.
Sure.
It's like the kinds of apps I hate to work with, which are half JavaScript, half PHP, you know?
Right.
So half of my tests, every feature has a Jest unit test and a PHP unit test.
Right.
And I think the setups are pretty end-to-endy for both of those. But still, the feature spans across two stacks. And it just sucks, man. Like, imagine having to do like stuff with history push state. How are you going to do that in Jest? You got to mock the history API. Mm. So it's like, oh. And I don't know. It's just, I will benefit so much from being able to write a test that's like, visits this page, hits this button, hits the back button, sees this change, changes this thing in the URL, sees it on the page. It's just so simple.
You might actually have the only code that you should actually use Dusk to test.
I mean, I disagree with that, but Dusk is faster now for some reason.
Is it?
Somehow. It's pretty fast. So I'm not on.
Is it faster or is it just that you've written smaller tests?
Oh, I mean, there's probably some of that. It just seems faster. But
is it just that your test suite is small right now, so you think it's fast? But as soon as your test suite actually becomes
slow.
Big.
It's going to be much slower than before. I don't dispute that. But one of the strategies I'm doing is like writing a giant test for everything, for an entire feature, like, and separating the chunks by like a comment that says what it does instead of separate test methods, so that there's no like killing the browser and rebooting it. It's all just in one thing, you know, but testing very different things. So anyway, but my test setup, Decol, it's actually a dream, for real. It's a dream. Wrap your head around this. Mm-hmm. This is the world I've created for myself inside of LiveWire now.
Sure.
A LiveWire feature. If I'm going to create a new feature, let's say loading states don't exist. There's no,
sure,
no such thing as wire loading.
Yep.
So I go, I'm going to create this. I create a folder in test/browser. I create a folder called loading states. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now in this folder, I create 3 files, test.php, component.php, and view.blade.php. And the component and the view are totally vanilla, normal LiveWire components, or component and view, you know, like standard. Okay. And the test, like, so I wrote this fancy API so I can basically like, you know, like this arrow visit in Dusk to like visit a URL. I can basically just visit a LiveWire component and it just is all wired up to work. So just like visit a LiveWire component and it's that component. And now I can interact with it. So that folder houses, like when I'm like test code setup, whatever, they're components. It's a literal component in view. Like you can't get more real life than that.
Yep.
It feels incredible. It really does. It feels like, I don't know. It feels so good. And yeah. And there's so, I don't know. Dusk is just so good. Yeah. So anyway.
Yeah, no, I like writing Dust or Dusk.
If you do it, there's ways to do it that are very, very powerful, you know?
Yeah. I still think that there is something missing.
Oh, right. Yeah. Our thing. Yeah. I mean, probably, but this is about as close as you're going to get.
Yeah.
And there's some things you could, I have this, you know, like the golden rule of Dusk tests and like acceptance tests, like never wait for anything. Like, never pause a specific amount of time, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that is how you die in this world, is by waiting a specific amount of time. I
did write a sleep in a test recently.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you got to do it. It's so here's what I did.
Because, we got rid of it. We refactored it out on code review. But
because I own LiveWire, I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, you're the king.
So I want to, you know, say like a test where like I press a button and then I assert that something happens, like for the loading states. I want to press a button and assert that I see the loading, then wait till it disappears and then assert that it's gone, right?
Yeah.
So I need to test this. And if on a normal connection, that's so fast that like you, it's just a blip. So how do you assert in that blip? You add a sleep. No. This is what I did. I exposed out of LiveWire like a window level variable of like if LiveWire has a request out to the server or not. And then I have a JavaScript or a PHP macro, a Dusk macro. It's called like wait for LiveWire request that pings JavaScript to see when that variable is true. And then it continues. And then a wait for response that waits for it to be false, whatever. And then it continues. Cool. And so I basically have those, or I can just do arrow wait for LiveWire. And it will wait for the full LiveWire request programmatically, so I don't set any sleeps or anything, and it's deterministic and predictable.
Yeah.
You know? So anyway. Yeah. So Dusk. Cool. Dusk. Yeah. I mean, the trade-offs
are... Did we talk about
my
event sourcing stuff?
No.
I'm event sourcing.
For your bot machine?
No, for work.
Oh, for work.
We you know, like the whole point of the company is to basically answer the question, like, was someone a certified home inspector on this date?
Okay.
Which is a pretty like event sourcing friendly purpose for your app.
Okay.
Right. So we're adding event sourcing for all of the like becoming a member, paying your dues, removing, you know, like if your membership expires, if it gets renewed again, you know, all of that stuff is going to be like event driven.
Yeah.
So right now we're just storing the events, but we're not projecting.
Replaying them. Okay.
But one of the things is like, okay, well, we also have like millions and millions of rows in this database that would need events, you know? So I've been like writing a generator to basically like parse millions of rows in our audit, because we have like one of those audit logs packages that basically like detects changes to models and stores them.
Okay.
So we have all these like audit logs.
Yeah.
So I've basically just been like writing this thing that like parses the audit logs and like regenerates past events. So I've basically been like backfilling a bunch of event sourcing data.
Hmm.
So that, and then like proving that like it.
Nice.
It works.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
So anyway, it's super cool over here.
It's awesome.
Doing some event sourcing.
Look at you.
Yeah. It's fun. I like it. We're using the Spotsy package.
Cool.
We could have used the Frank DeJong.
Yep.
Event, I don't remember what it's called, but that one seemed a little bit too
crazy, like, town deep,
just dogmatic, I guess.
Okay.
And I, that could have been a bad read, but that was a little bit what it felt like, was that it was a little like, would you like to become an event sourcing god? Like, It's just like all of the, it used all of the event sourcing words really heavily.
Yeah.
And it felt a little bit like maybe if I was designing an event source app from the ground up, I would look at this. But right now I'm just kind of trying to like bolt this onto a tiny part of my app.
Yeah. I'm interested to hear the follow up on how this goes.
Yeah, me too. We recently discovered, I know we have 5 minutes and that's it. I recently discovered that one of our tables has a different schema in production than it does when you run the migrations.
Oh, no.
I discovered this when I like started writing tests for this event sourcing thing. And I was like, whoa. Why? What do you mean there's no column called old data? And I was like, oh, the column is just called old. I was like, wait a second. And I went and looked at production. I was like, but it's old data here. Why is it old here? And it was like, some refactor someone had done somewhere had changed some, anyway.
Migrations are event sourcing for database schema.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good way to understand event sourcing.
Yeah.
It's migrations. It's like migrations for data.
Yeah.
Interesting. Sweet, T-Cole. I'm going to hit this record button. Actually, I'll just cue the outro music right now.
Bump it up.